falls to the 30-yard line. Out comes Jim McMahon. We told you, pinched nerve in his neck. He was in traction after the game on Sunday. Has not worked out this week. Ditka was pretty positive he would not play. He said he needed to practice if he was going to play. And his two wins over Tampa Bay and New England. Jim is 36 of 55, 65.5%, three touchdowns, a couple of interceptions. We told you earlier, missed seven games last year, all of the playoff games with a lacerated kidney, as Fuller started four of those last six games of the season. But here he is, Jim McMahon, late All-American from Brigham Young University, has taken over for the Bears. Pressure on the first play, and right open.
I love it!
As Willie Gault, forget it. If he gets behind you, it's over, and McMahon paid the price, but he got the touchdown, 70-yard touchdown. He really got hammered just as he released the ball. 5:33 remaining in the third quarter. Minnesota leading Chicago 17-16. McMahon firing. McKinnon, touchdown. McMahon has thrown two footballs tonight, two touchdowns, a 25-yarder there to McKinnon. Earlier, a few moments ago, if you were not with us, a 70-yarder to Willie Gault. Well, he almost pulled Ditka's leg too long because Ditka wasn't going to play him tonight because he had not worked out. A first down. This is McMahon again, right open field in front of him. He wants a bundle.
Got McKinnon.
That is McKinnon. Third touchdown pass tonight for McMahon. McKinnon second, a 43-yard effort, and he is blowing this game away.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time to remember this crap with Mike Donahue. Today we're going to remember the Matt Nagy era. No, we're not going to do that
yet. Is it over yet? Is it over?
I don't know. I'm just waiting to see what Hub says. Haven't heard much from Hub lately. I don't know what's going on. So we are going to... The Bears are playing the Vikings again. They seem to finish the season a lot with the Vikings in Minnesota.
Off the top of my head, 2011 when Urlacher got hurt in the last game of the year? They knocked him out, a disincentivized Bears playoff team, the only one that we've experienced in recent years. Did they not keep the Vikings out by beating them in the Metrodome? Or they may have, which was hilarious. I'm pretty sure. I know it's recent, but I think I've already established that I usually suck
they
more.
Did it. The
more
they recent. Played there twice with Mitch.
It would have been week 16.
Now, part of it, I think, is under the way they want to do it now, the final week will always be against a division opponent. So you only have three possible opponents.
Is that right? I didn't know that. That's a thing now, huh?
Yeah. So.
I was not aware.
It's probably going to be the Vikings a lot. Because the Lions, you know, you're in that kind of Thanksgiving rotation, so you'll have already gone to Detroit like they did this year.
Maybe.
The Packers, I don't know, they want to save Bears-Packers for the last week because it gets good ratings no matter what.
Because of all of us idiots in the Chicago.
It might end up being the Vikings a lot. But anyway, so we are going to hearken back. You know what we should have done? For no reason. We could have gone back to the Audible. We could have gone back to the Jim Harbaugh disaster in the Metrodome and relive that
30 years ago.
Sent it to George McCaskey and said, remember what this asshole did? But we're not doing that because I don't want to relive that. I have a great story about that. I believe I told it about how the minute that he threw the second interception, my friend Neil and I sent our friend asshole's girlfriend, beautiful, out to the bottle store, and she bought us all 30 packs of Old Style Light, and we drank them all that day.
You have told that story on this very podcast.
Yes.
Last year, when we did two fresh
original.
Another
reason why I hate Jim Harbaugh.
Yes.
My liver and me both hate Jim Harbaugh.
It's been entered into the canon. It's been sometimes a house of horrors. It's a weird, it was a weird play, although it wasn't as weird for football as it was for baseball. I've actually had the unique pleasure of watching both sports and the professional level there. Football actually, you know, in a neutral sense, it was fine. I saw the 2001 Bears team, which were young and fast, flying all over the field. And football is very, uniform with you know, how everything is. Unless you have somebody that's going to boom a punt off the speakers, I don't think it's it's really a factor. Baseball is an unholy experience that I, you know, just couldn't get over. But having said that, the Bears, of course, have had some success in the Roller Dome, but none possibly quite as awesome as what we're going to discuss here tonight.
Right. So we're going to go back to a Thursday night, week three of the 1985 season. Special Monday Night Football on Thursday night. They couldn't even call it Thursday Night Football. With the immortal broadcast crew of Frank Gifford, Joe Namath, and O.J. Simpson.
You want to talk about remember some crap or remember this crap? Without looking it up, it would almost be hard to recall that for a 2 year period that was the crew. Yeah, Joe Namath, what, OJ, Frank Gifford, there, and there's a reason why you could be forgiven for not remembering it.
Well, we looked it up. Joe only did it for a year. And he said, "Fuck this, I'm done."
Oh, this was his only year.
OJ did it for three, and Frank did it forever. So this was it for Joe. He was one and done. And when you hear him, you kind of see why.
It's probably the low point, now that I think about it, of the whole Monday night production dating back to Rune Arledge's inception in 1970. I think this would be this sort of transition between the Meredith, Cosell, Gifford to the Al Michaels and, you know, whatever. I guess you got to give Deardorff the credit. I mean, they're still
certainly on ABC. They've had some rough years on ESPN, like when they had
– right.
Joe Tessitore and the Booger Mobile.
Yeah.
And God, who was the color guy?
I would be more comfortable, in fact, if you drew the line at when they jumped ship from, because I'm not familiar with the ESPN broadcast. Through the years.
Oh, Jason Witten. How can I forget?
Right. Who's playing again? Right? Is he still playing?
He went back to play mostly to get out of the booth.
Last year, I remember this crap. Actually, you would informed me of the fact that he was back after having been in the booth for Monday Night Football.
He came back and
they change a lot now. They actually got some stability when they settled on Deardorff, Michaels, and Gifford until they threw Gifford out. I think, I don't know. But yeah, this was not a good broadcast. We're going to spare the listeners the whole game. Also interesting to note that we've at least, made it more updated considering the last Bears Vikings game that we did was 1979. So
we're ahead. Although there's still a bunch of those guys.
There are, which I found very interesting.
Greg
I want
Coleman,
to make sure we
Scott
we
Studwell
it.
Is still
Greg
running.
Coleman is Studwell was in both games.
Tommy Kramer.
Kramer was the starting quarterback in both games. Pretty
Ted Brown?
Impressive 6 years of punts.
No.
I don't remember it. Was there a Ted Brown sighting in
this
game?
Yeah, they put up that he was like the fourth all-time Viking
rusher
during the game. So I don't think he played very much. Well, I can tell you how much he played. We have the internet.
While you queue it up, I'll just point out that, you know, we're going to, play the audio at a very critical point in the game, but we don't want anyone to miss out. So we'll kind of provide a quick synopsis of how things went in the first half.
Oh, Ted Brown was all over this game. One carry for 6 yards and one catch for 9 yards. How could you miss him? So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the beginning of the game, and then we are going to pick it up, the actual broadcast, at the moment Jim McMahon finally has worn Ditka down, and he's going to put him in. And then we're just going to, it's not exactly a spoiler alert. The game happened, 37 years ago. He throws three touchdowns pretty fast, and we're going to go through all three of those drives.
Yep.
And then we'll wrap up what happened in the game. So it's about 20 minutes of game action that we're going to go, which is about what we typically use those condensed games. So it's about the same.
Yeah, I think it works. And yeah.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So coming into this game, the Vikings were a surprising 2-0. And they had gone 3-13 the previous season. And that was a season after which Bud Grant had retired after a long storied career as the Vikings coach. But apparently, you know, the 3-13 season, the Bears clinching their first ever NFC Central Division Championship, you know, on their home turf in 84. All of this just must have enraged Viking Nation to the point where crusty old Bud Grant comes right out of retirement immediately and comes back. And they, in week one, this team that went 3-13 defeats the Super Bowl champion, the team that went 15-1 the year before and plowed through their second Montana championship. They beat the Niners. They win week two. They're 2-0. And here come the Bears. And of course, there's the probable Viking arrogance coming into this game because they're still fresh off, you know, a dominant run, at least in the division. And who are these Bears? Yeah, they won a division last year and they, you know, swept us and whatever. And you know, that's kind of must have been going through a lot of their heads. And the Bears, of course, feeling confident because they feel like they're ascending, which, of course, they proved to be. But it got off to a little bit of a rough start. So it's kind of funny to see how quickly the Bears turned all that on its ear.
Yeah, well, I can see why the Vikings were cocky. The Bears had just won only their third road playoff game in franchise history. How embarrassing was that, that they barely done that? You think about all the ones they've done since, like when they went to Minnesota and they beat the Vikings on New Year's Day 95, and oh, that's it.
That's it.
Four, ever.
But ever. Hey, at least one of them was in the hump dump. So yeah, it really does even out. There have been horrors, but there have been, you know, relatively.
Yeah, I think the Bears have only won road games at the Polo Grounds.
Or Yankee Stadium.
Probably Yankee Stadium.
Okay.
I think two at RFK.
Definitely. Certainly. At least one. That's all you need.
And the Hump Dome. And none of those stadiums are used for football. None of them exist. They're all gone.
The only thing I would want to know is
they're all gone.
If RFK 1984, is that the same stadium in which the Bears also beat the Redskins in 1940? And I think they also won the 43 championship in Washington. I don't know if that was RFK. Same city. So
whatever, you know, stadium they wanted in Washington, it ain't there. There's not a stadium in existence other than Soldier Field.
I get your point.
I mean, Wrigley, it's still standing out for football, except for once
a
year.
No, but it is standing, but it's fitting that it's...
So outside of the city of Chicago, there is not a stadium standing that the Bears have won a playoff game in. Other than, I guess there's one notable exception, and that would be the Superdome.
Oh, New Orleans.
But yeah, that was a neutral site.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there you have it. So...
I want George McCaskey to put that on the little fact sheet that they send out to all the candidates for the coach and GM jobs. That'll be good.
So what you see in the first half, what we'll spare you with tonight, but you're welcome to view it yourself. Various Viking sightings. And I'm sorry, I have to make a diversion this early in this because this is your fault, but in one of your pointless exercise newsletters last week, you provided a link to what I just thought was just indescribable gold, and it was the 1977 Sun Bowl with Pat Summerall and Tom Brookshire and Burt Reynolds.
I think it was David Roth from Defector that originally posted it.
Good, good.
And so I found it. I was like, "Oh, this is great." The best part about it, if you watch it, you don't have to watch the whole thing, but you have to watch the beginning.
You have to watch the
whole thing. Is that they treat it like Burt is always doing college football. They don't introduce him. He's not the star of Gator or the Longest Yard.
Okay, here's my take.
They just let him do the stand-up like he's just one of the crew.
I will say that they would actually make a couple references.
Well, yeah.
Sometimes they'd make he would be self-deprecating. Yes. He actually was a good analyst, though, when he chimed in. Like, he did a little bit of homework on I forget. What I loved about it was, first of all, that, and that's why you let us into it, was talking about them running over the border. And
which they freely admit in the telecast. They went to Juarez.
Which that alone makes it worthwhile. It's also where it's just an amazing thing to watch. And the funny thing is, those three guys, we've talked about Summerall. We haven't really talked about Brookshire, and I've been thinking a lot about him because, kind of a trivia answer, like, he was the broadcaster before Madden revolutionized it. And it was Brookshire, and he was not bad at doing that. He was. It wasn't like Madden came into like an empty cupboard, and he just did it way differently. But Brookshire was a really good and pretty funny guy. But the thing about all those guys is that they were all like around the same age and all played like major college football in the early to mid 50s. Burt Reynolds, of course, at Florida State, they talk about how Lee Corso was his back. Yep. There's so many references in that 15 minute clip. And then there are also so many, I'm going to bring it back here. Players in that game that we would recognize as future pros, like James Lofton, frickin' David Woodley. I didn't know he was the LSU quarterback. And then, of course, there are actually not one but two players in that game that are in this game tonight, and that would be Darren Nelson, who was Stanford's running back, Bill Walsh's Stanford's running back, and Willie Teal, whose name you're going to hear when we do play the audio. And Willie was like, it couldn't have been more than a freshman or sophomore for, and I don't remember which team, but he was on, he played in the 77 Sun Bowl, LSU. Willie Teal is from LSU.
I mean, the reason that CBS, so Tom Brookshire and Pat Summerall were the number one team on CBS.
And they were pretty good.
And they were good, but the problem was they were both functioning alcoholics. This is not me making a joke. They really were. And CBS intentionally broke them up because they were worried Pat was going to die.
I don't remember seeing that in the All Madden documentary.
And that was part of the reason to pair Pat with John. Pat's John's our best play-by-play announcer. He's a drunk. And him and Brookshire are literally getting drunk right up until game time, and then could both just do the game completely suave
and just keep boozing afterwards.
And they literally, that was part of the calculus of putting them together. Pat's life.
Whatever actually
needed a liver transplant.
Consulted them with that, probably saved Pat Summerall's life, or at least extended it by 20 years.
They talked about Corso, but did they mention the fact that Lee wasn't just Burt's teammate? They were roommates.
I didn't know that.
Lee has brought that up.
Well, they're back. One was a backup to the other.
Lee had a nice little tribute on game day that when Burt died.
Okay.
They were legitimately friends for like 50 years.
Crazy.
Since college, they stayed friends. I'm sure Burt probably Burt probably came to DeKalb to visit Lee while he was coaching. Burt was just hanging out
in the early 80s.
Yeah. Went to Molly's and down to the.
Certainly McCabe's was around. Yeah.
I'll be mad. All right.
So, other various Vikings that you may have missed in the first half, they have this cadre of receivers, Mike Jones. There's Busta Rhymes that you've referenced before, not the same as the rap producer, but the rap producer did give himself the stage name of Busta Rhymes because of this player who, as it turns out, makes his first NFL reception later on in this game on a big drive. And, of course, the pride of Ann Arbor, Anthony Carter, AC, who I have memories of going back to a Notre Dame Michigan matchups from before. USFL star
Frank obsessed with how little Anthony Carter is.
I know. And Carter was really good receiver for a while.
He had played in the USFL. Was it the Michigan Panthers?
It was Michigan Panthers for 2 years. And then apparently they did something like they merged with another team. It was kind of the same.
He was no Tremaine Johnson.
That's the thing. He kind of was, I was going to bring him up in the context of our guy, Tremaine Johnson, in that, I think Anthony was like the first ever MVP. I think he was a monster in the USFL. They also had two notable receivers, Steve Jordan, who's a very good receiver. I meant tight end. Steve Jordan, of course, remember him. And of course, future NFL coach, Mike Mularkey was another. And then that other Scott Studwell, you said Carl Lee gets a pick in the end, and then various Bears they made him as Tim Reitman, Brad Anderson, Calvin Thomas, LA Mike Richardson, Andy Frederick. There's an Andy Frederick sighting on the sideline, and also apparently an asthmatic referee, which seems like every time he's announcing a call, he's just struggling.
I had an issue right away with the referee. His name is Dick Jorgensen. Now, there is no way in the world that a guy named Dick Jorgensen should be allowed to do a Minnesota home game.
Dick,
you get the biggest fucking Swede you can find, and you let him do the Vikings game?
At least his name wasn't Sven.
Jorgensen with an E, even.
Right.
You can't get more Swedish than Jorgensen with an E. Bears were screwed from the very beginning.
He seemed to have trouble being heard, but we'll hear a clip of him in the highlights, so we can get back to him. Other things you might have missed in the first half is not once but twice our guy Frank Gifford makes a reference to Bears defensive coordinator Buddy Curry.
Buddy Curry. The best is he actually the first time refers to him as the great Buddy Curry. So great you can't get his name right. And I had to look up. I'm like, all right, is there a Buddy Curry? And he was playing linebacker for the Falcons at the time. He played 8 years in the NFL.
8 year, okay, not a Hall of Famer. I was telling you before.
That's a very hairy thing, which is you just think of somebody else when you go to say when you get a name wrong.
Right.
Later on, Harry was mangling names so badly we couldn't tell who he meant. But for a long time, you could figure out. Okay, well, it's not. We know it's not Buddy Curry. It's Buddy Ryan, and we know why you think that.
Raphael Palermo. Yeah.
Frank's going to have a rough. Well, Frank was just a rough announcer. He was bad.
He wasn't that good, and this is not one of his better outings. I think apparently there was no chemistry, I don't think. It's not a good crew, and it was short-lived.
Are times when you assume the three can't hear each other. That they're all doing their own broadcast at the same time. And you're like, wait a minute, what? They're not. They all talk about something, and the other guys don't comment on it at all. They just wait for somebody to stop talking and then they start. It's like, holy shit.
Disjointed would be the most charitable description I could make. But not to be outdone, by the way, as far as Frank Gifford confusing Buddy Ryan with Buddy Curry, is that OJ makes a reference to Bears defensive lineman Dave Hampton.
Dave,
former Atlanta running back who we've discussed on Remember This Crap for having rushed for over 1,000 yards and then getting tackled for a loss, but that's neither here nor there. We see our guy Les Frazier makes an interception in the first half, 4 months before Steve Kazor would end his career in the Super Bowl. There's some Peyton adulation. Of course, now Peyton has enjoyed over almost a calendar year of being the all-time leading rusher, and he's still getting 1,500 yards a season. A Greg Coleman sighting. You were the one that I didn't even remember this, or I don't think I ever knew this at the time, but Greg Coleman, of course, was Frank's a little confused about it. We'll hear it because I think it's on the clip, but he is the cousin of
Vince Coleman,
St. Louis Cardinal Vince Coleman. And this is 1985, by the way. The only thing that would be more perfect is if the 1987 Cardinals Twins World Series would be played in 1985 and that Greg's cousin would have still gotten eaten alive by the tarp on that field. But it didn't quite work out. But 85 was the year that Vince Coleman did not play in that year's World
Series.
What
if Frank had predicted it?
About a month after this.
On the record. Hey, you know, his cousin Vince plays baseball for the Cardinals. And, you know, he needs to be careful. I've seen him. He gets a little too close to the automatic tarps before games. Those are dangerous. Vince,
Frank is just the savant seer. He can't get names right, but he can see the future.
Is this pre-Kathy Lee?
It is, for sure. He might have been courting her. He might have been courting her. I think that became a thing in the 90s.
Do you know what Kathy Lee's job was when Frank started dating her?
Oh, I don't want to say what I'm thinking.
No, she wasn't a stewardess. Those were different. He got into stewardesses later.
That was later.
She was the, I forget what they called her, like the Bong Bong Girl on Name That Tune. She was the one who would sing the lyric and then leave out the name of the song.
Okay.
So she'd be like, you know, I can't even think of one, but she'd be like, doo, 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 and then bong, 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 or whatever noise she was supposed to make to let you know that that's where the name of the song is. I'm not going to say it because that's what she did. They would have her singing long before she was annoying people on cruise ships.
And Frank, coming in between 2 days and flipping on the
Kathy Lee, as annoying as she was when she was young. It's a good-looking woman.
Oh, yeah. She was fine. I mean, you know, the whole thing. Yeah, she got increasingly wacky and crazy. Yeah. And
now,
like,
is she still getting drunk on the Today Show every day?
Was she getting buzzed? Maybe they
get, Tom Brookshire on with her. Oh, I think he's
That's
dead.
Right. Unfortunately. Yeah, Frank also at one point in the first half, and just to characterize the offense, the real backdrop, of course, the drama, and they allude to it. What's going on here is that you see a couple shots of Jim McMahon sort of lurking the sidelines like a caged animal. The thing is, the Bears are 2-0, and they failed to advance the previous year. When they lost to the Niners in the game, we've discussed ad nauseum, you know, the whole line was that they walked off the field and the Niners were like, next year, bring your offense. And, you know, it was like, if only we could keep McMahon healthy. And not even two games into the 85 season, he's not starting because he's banged up. I don't even know what he had this time. They talk about it.
Oh, they do. Yeah. He spent the week in traction for a pinched nerve in his neck suffered in a win in Foxborough.
No, against Chicago. It was still Soldier Field. Yeah, okay. Week two.
So the game in Chicago against the Patriots, their eventual Super Bowl foe.
Yeah, 20-7
and
victory.
The big deal was because it was a Thursday night game.
That's right.
You know, because clearly he's been shot up and he's up and around. And had there been a Sunday game, he probably would have practiced on Thursday, and this wouldn't have been a big deal. But he hadn't been able to practice, and so Ditka said, "Well, if you can't practice, you can't play," which is
that was his philosophy.
One of the bullshit coach rules that immediately gets broken in an act of desperation, or what does Frank keep calling it? Catastrophe.
He keeps referring to
it's not the emergency quarterback. Jim McMahon is the catastrophe quarterback.
They all at some point.
No, that was
rallied.
Rusty Lish. That was the catastrophe quarterback.
Yeah, well, Lish was long. He was long. Ditka had long ago punted Lish into Lake Michigan. But all three of them had essentially rallied throughout, and I think even well before the clip we'll play. But they eventually all sort of come around to Ditka's defense as far as, well, I believe that Namath says some bullshit about if you don't practice, especially for a quarterback, I don't know if you should play. You know, so that's going on too. You know, the Bears are 2-0. We do have high hopes it will turn out to work out, but you know, we're dealing with Fuller, who was good enough to get them to that title game with a couple of like fluky plays. He was better than other backups we had, and he was not actually shitty in this game. In my first memory before rewatching it, I just in my own, you know, Mandela affected narrative, it just like Steve Fuller was terrible and Ditka just got pissed off. He wasn't terrible. He got them down the field, but they kept like settling for field goals. And you know what it felt like when I was watching it again? I'm like, this felt like every Monday night football game after the Super Bowl season for like 6 or 7 years, where, you know, often be close if it wasn't a blowout in San Francisco. To be often a close game where an inept offense just can't pull away because they can't get points. And so Fuller, he did have a couple bad picks, or maybe just one, but you know, he wasn't completely horrible, but every time they'd get within the red zone, and they were stuffing Peyton, to their credit, the Vikings were, they just weren't getting points. So it wasn't like a completely inept offense, but certainly with what it was and with number nine making his presence felt, you know, up and down the sidelines, like I said, like a caged animal, I think we're headed towards something. But one more thing about Frank, I wanted to say that at one point the Bears do go up 2 field goals, 6, or, you know, it's tied at 3, and the Bears, Butler kicks another field goal, and Frank tells us that the score is 6-0.
Yep.
No, Frank. And Frank also refers to Mike Richardson as he's a really developed into a fine cornerback, and I think most Bears fans from that era remember that if there is a weak link on the 85 Bears defense, that'd be the guy.
It was L.A. Mike. Yeah, so some things Mike. I learned. The Bears traded a draft pick for Maury Buford. Did you catch what round that draft pick was?
Was it like the 12th?
The 12th.
It was the 12th.
Early of a 12th round draft pick. Way to go, Maury. Maury was the all-time, and Frank referred to him as the all-time leading kicker in Chargers history.
Yeah, Frank, just...
I guess Frank, I don't know what that means. Was he really the punter, or was he... Was he Rolf Benerska?
Yeah, no, he was.
Two Rolf Benerska references another, in a row.
Absolutely. Well, it was a replay, but it came out typically in a Giants podcast. But yeah, he was Rolf Benerska's counterpart before becoming rookie Kevin Butler's counterpart.
Okay, early in the game, OJ says it's a good thing that the Bears are establishing the run with Walter because Walter has sore ribs.
I heard that. I remember that. I don't remember ever hearing Peyton.
Basically, I think OJ was trying to make the point that it shows that even with sore ribs, they're still going to run the ball. It didn't make any sense. It was very OJ. Frank said that the way he said it, I was like, holy shit, how would that happen? He said, through two games, the Vikings have 12 turnovers. And I'm like, oh my God, they committed 12 turnovers? No, he meant they had forced 12 turnovers, including seven in the opener against the Niners. And then Frank said they won going away 28-21.
That's almost like a football a summary equivalent of line drive, caught base hit, caught out there.
Now, here's the weird thing. I couldn't find, so I went back and looked at the box scores for the two games. And yes, their credit was seven turnovers forced against the Niners and five against Tampa.
Okay.
And you can see that there's four interceptions total in the two games. And when I look at the there are no fumbles listed. It's just the weirdest thing. I assume there were fumbles that didn't make the box score in 1985.
Well, one thing that bothers me, I know,
or are
they
turnover
do
on downs?
I don't think it is, but I do think turnover on downs should count as a turnover. And it always bothers me that they don't usually count that as a turnover.
I did enjoy that at one point. Gifford, promotes a piece that's going to be on the halftime show. Did you catch this?
Dick Shapp.
Dick Shapp has a great story. Frank has seen it. Great story on the fact the NFL is experimenting with this crazy technology of putting a radio in a quarterback's helmet. Never going to work. And they might bring replay back. And they talked about they experimented with replay in
preseason games. Yes. Yeah, that practice, I think, actually goes back to the 70s. They were really slow. They actually brought, and we talked about this on an earlier episode, but opening day 1986, the year after this, in Soldier Field was the first instance of that legitimate use of instant replay. So it was actually very close to being used in that earlier weird version of it.
At one point in the first half, the Bears are down towards the goal line, and they stop. They just grind to a halt because there's too much crowd noise. And you get to relive that wonderful era where teams just stood there at the line of scrimmage waiting for the crowd to get quiet. The dumbest thing ever.
No radios. No, I don't know why can they deal with that now and they couldn't do it? Then it was just like a...
The NFL basically just said... You know what? Tough shit. You're just going to have to figure out other ways to signal
silent
plays.
Count,
and, that's
silent
what they, and that's what they did. Yeah. But yeah, you could just stand there and then they could, and I don't know what year, the rules were different some years. Some years you could actually, the home team could actually get a penalty.
I remember
if the
that.
Crowd wouldn't shut up. You could,
which
you
I
could,
was,
they could force you to use a timeout if the crowd
didn't
shut up. They
favor,
tried all
which
kinds
I was,
of shit.
I was in favor of that because I was like an 11-year-old meatball who resented teams that played in domes to begin with because it was always loud and scary and the Bears always seemed to shit their pants in domes. So, but yeah, that's, yeah, deal with it. Yeah.
They had a great graphic showing the final six games of the Vikings 1984 season, where they set an NFL record that unlikely to be topped. If Mark Trestman didn't break it, nobody's going to. The Vikings lost their last six games of the Les Steckel regime all by 30 points or more.
All of them. Not an average of.
They lost them all by at least 30 points.
Incredible. Incredible.
And that's why Bud said, fuck it, I'm coming out of retirement.
Right.
And he brought Jerry Burns back with him.
They did.
To catch that. So, Jerry apparently had retired too. Ah, fine, I'll just quit. Jerry ended up coaching them after that.
They didn't show Jerry, but they do in the whatever shovel that he used to comb his hair. But they did. So is that I thought I'd look because we've talked about Jerry Burns more than any healthy Bears fan should. But I thought the story was, I know way too much now about the Vikings than I should, but that Jerry Burns expected to be named as Bud Grant's successor, and that I thought he threatened to quit. But so maybe he actually he left.
Well, maybe
he may have. No, he may have. He may have quit. He eventually did get the job, of course, because I think Grant only came back for this one season, by the way, In fact, now that I look at it, and based on what we know now, there were some politics involved. He came back to give his buddy Jerry the job. Like somehow his successor was not handled in the way that Bud wanted. And because they were so awful under Les Steckel, he was able to bring himself back in and set things right. So, yeah, whatever. I guess it worked because the Vikings don't have a lot of long periods of being shitty, to be honest. And that one season's got to be one of their worst ever.
Now, just to be clear, this Jerry Burns we're talking about is not the Jerry Burns who was on the Judd Hirsch sitcom Dear John or on Justified.
I believe you said he spelled his name differently, or no?
J-E-R-E, where he plays the great, the show's over, although I'm sure they'll bring it back because they reboot everything. He played the great Win Duffy. Unjustified.
I apologize. I watched a lot of television in the 1990s, a lot of NBC television, but I did not watch Dear John. Yeah. There are only so many shows out there.
Let's see what else I learned in the first half. So the Vikings basically had two goal line stands against the Bears, forced them into short field goals. The second one, a comically short 19 yards by Kevin Butler. That was the one where Walter on third down was going to jump over the pile and... Joey Browner, right? But yep. Nobody blocked him. Grabbed him by the ankles before he could jump. Not a great scheme.
Yeah, not a great game for Walter, and that's fine because we just did that Vikings game, which was one of the greatest ones from '79. But
OJ told us he got sore ribs.
Yes,
and
he also has a huge part in the narrative of tonight's action.
He gave somebody else sore ribs.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, so when Butler makes the second field goal, Frank gets all excited. The Bears are up 6-0. They're actually up 6-3. Right before the half, Mike Richardson drops an interception. And like four plays later, Anthony Carter catches a touchdown pass to go up 10-6.
Yeah, the Vikings are up now.
And Bears kick a field goal and make it 10-9. And then the Vikings score to go up 17-9, although Frank apparently misses that touchdown. And
is that still before halftime? They
this is after halftime. The second half. It was 10-7 at halftime. 10-6 at halftime. Bears kick a field goal. Vikings score a touchdown. And Mike Ditka says, fuck this. McMahon, you're in. Now, McMahon had been, and I didn't see it on telecast as much as I'm sure I've seen it on NFL films, their recaps of it, where with Jim clearly annoying Ditka on the sidelines.
It's not obvious.
They show it a couple of times. You could see it, especially if you know to look for it. Book, and in McMahon, with an exclamation point, one of the great autobiographies ever written, he talks about how he basically was just, from the time, I think of the second goal line stand, he just badgered Ditka constantly.
I think McMahon's embellishing, but it is funny to watch. The first time, if you watch the video, 29:53, there's like the first, looks a little bit like a cage animal, but he's by himself. And Namath talks a little bit about Ditka's so-called philosophy. They show him again a little bit more in the second half. What was he doing in the second? I jotted it down. They show him without his helmet still, but the third time's the funniest because he's got at 107, he's got his helmet on and Gifford's sort of like laughing because he does go up to Ditka. This is the one he goes up to Ditka. It's not incendiary, but it is pretty funny when you know the context of what like McMahon's like. Now he's got his helmet on. He's basically without having to say anything, he's telling Ditka, "All right, I'm ready to go in now." I Ditka probably saw it. Ditka kept his cool. Like you don't sense that Ditka like reacts to what he says. That's why it does seem sort of underplayed, but he does say something and it's probably just like, get the fuck out of here or not a chance or like, leave me alone. I don't know what we don't know what he says, but he definitely wasn't.
I mean, one thing that we know happened now, but they didn't know at the time was that not only did he put his helmet on, he took Steve Fuller's helmet and he went and he filled it with nachos and cheese. And gave it to Steve and said, here you go, buddy. See if you can finish this. And that was that was pretty much the end.
Well done.
And you can see a very confused Mike Tomczak, too, on the sidelines, hoping he doesn't have to go in.
Yeah.
And the fans at home not knowing yet that we also really do not want him to go in.
But, correct, because I don't think we'd see – we obviously hadn't seen him. It's only the third game of the season.
Oh, I'm sure we saw him light it up in preseason like every other Bear.
May have, although starters played more in preseason then. I will say that.
I'm sure McMahon was hurt.
Well, yeah.
All right, so now we're going to get to the actual – so if you want to follow along at home, and I don't know why. I'll put the link. You watch the game if you want. But we're going to start it here at
highlights.
Right about 121. They come back from commercial. The Vikings had just scored to go up 8.
Actually, I'm going to ask you just to back just it back up because it bit. Is funny because there's a little bit of like a rise before the fall.
All right.
After Jan Stenerud's extra point, I think I had 121. And this is where we're at again. Bud Grant's back. They beat the defending champs. The old swagger's back. The Bears are going to go back to sucking. That's what the world looks like at this moment in time.
They're playing him loose. He splits the two linebackers right here. Singletary didn't get over to the strong side.
You can't let him inside down there either. You're playing over his nose. You've got to make him go outside.
Well, in fairness to Singletary, you never know who's supposed to be covering whom in this type of defense.
You say who?
Oh, geez, they better find out. It's
going to be a long season.
Just fix it 17-9.
I love
Sorry,
that.
I didn't mean to talk over that.
Well, I love that Namath. Rhetoric. Namath is like, well, if they don't figure that out, it's going to be a long season. Yeah, because the Bear defense in 1985,
right.
Joe was all nice. Over it. They were going to struggle.
But yeah, it was 17-9.
And we have a 17-9
game.
Oh,
there's the stupid horn.
The Vikings, they're 2-0. They beat San Francisco in the opener. They beat Tampa Bay. They lead the Bears.
And then what happened, Frank?
I think we now know what Ditka, how he measures the catastrophe. Jim McMahon is going to come into the game. We were told he would not be in unless something catastrophic happened. He has his helmet on. Steve Fuller has his helmet off. Maybe the catastrophe is measured by 8 points down midway in the third quarter.
See, Frank knew there it was 8 points. He's going to forget.
Right. Also, Ditka fashion check, because what I'm really delighted in, and that we've done about four games in the era, there's always like a completely different Ditka look. I never realized as a kid growing up that Ditka possessed such a diversity of looks. And so just for the record, nice stripe button-down dress shirt, tie, hair's trimmed, so it's only slightly curly.
I guess I always have assumed that was a Tom Landry kind of thing. You know, Landry always wore the suit and the hat, and that was Ditka.
But I don't know if he finally said
"fuck it" and wore the iconic sweater vest instead.
But I don't know that Ditka necessarily came right in doing that all the time. Is kind of my thought.
No, I kind of feel that. Like he felt like I just felt like that was kind of the inspiration for it.
When he wore that outfit, when that selection came up for a particular week, I think he was very conscious of his mentor, that in a sort of this sort of biblical Christian salvation sense, kind of saved Ditka after he'd kind of played his way out of Chicago and bottomed out in Philly. So there was always that little bit of that piety, that rare piety that Ditka had, that was kind of deferential of Tom Landry.
So 17-9, and Jan Stenerud is going to kick off, and he's got to kick off to the greatest returning tandem in Bears history, because you know Devin Hester, only one man, but
it's
Willie Gault and Pinky Gentry. I mean, come on, just kick it out of bounds, Jan. Why?
By the
don't
way,
even risk it.
In the first half, one last thing: Gault in the first half returned a kick about the 38, and Gifford told us accurately, I assume, that it was the longest kickoff return of Willie Gault's career, and that would change in dramatic fashion in 10 days. And that's all I want to say.
Deep for the Bears. Gentry is back there, 29. Willie Gault. Willie Gault has come close to popping two of them tonight. Keep in mind he has that world-class sprinter speed. Five times in Tennessee, he took a kickoff for a touchdown, one short of the NCAA record.
Oh, wow.
Jan Stenerud will put it up.
He definitely was a world-class athlete.
Vikings leading 17-9. Willie Gault wants it. But he had to let Dennis Gentry take it. Gault stepped right in front of him, and Gentry goes to the 30-yard line. Out comes Jim McMahon. We told you.
So when they lined up for the kickoff, the ball gets kicked to the Bears' left hash, I guess, going. That was the side Willie was on.
I know.
So Pinky must have run over and cut him off to return
the
kick.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with that. Maybe Willie didn't want it in that particular one. Maybe because he was saving up for this next play. I don't know. It could have been it.
All right. So Jim McMahon is coming in, and little punk kid on his on a couch in Durand, Illinois, is very excited.
The entire region.
Pinch, nerve in his neck. He was in traction after the game on Sunday. Has not worked out this week. Ditka was pretty positive he would not play. He said he needed to practice if he was going to play. And his two wins over Tampa Bay and New England. Jim is 36 of 55, 65.5%, three touchdowns, a couple of interceptions. We told you earlier, missed seven games last year, all of the playoff games with a lacerated kidney, as Fuller started four of those last six games of the season. But here he is, Jim McMahon.
So, YouTube decided that they'd like to play an ad now.
That's
so,
all right.
As in every home in the U.S.
We're not going to listen to their stupid free ad.
It's a nice lead up, though. Gifford was actually somewhat succinct and clear, I think, going right up to that snap.
Yeah, he actually did a nice job of setting it up.
Yep.
Young University has taken over for the Bears. Pressure on the first play, and wide open.
I love it.
Willie Gault, forget it. If he gets behind you, it's over, and McMahon paid the price, but he got the touchdown, 70-yard touchdown. He really got hammered just as he released the ball.
Joe Namath screaming, I love it, right in the middle of the of Willie running.
It's kind of fun. I'll allow that. I'll give Joe some points for that, actually. The enthusiasm, at least that's in character with Broadway Joe. He's seen a swashbuckling quarterback that he's probably taken a little bit of a liking to, like, pull this shit off. What was that, a 60-yard pass?
70.
70-yard pass. Man. First snap, folks. So.
And yes, that's Johnson was coming on the blitz. I don't know whether he was the man that got him, but what a great shot, hitting Willie Gault right in stride.
Well, Walter Payton made it happen because he picked up that middle linebacker who timed his blitz perfectly. Watch 55,
OJ. No, it's not OJ. OJ would have blocked the wrong guy. He would have got Joe Ferguson killed.
He tells us to watch the guy that Mark Borch is not having any, I assume it's Borch or possibly Thayer, not having any trouble with.
52, Walter Payton picked him up. The blitz was perfect. And a beautiful pass by McMahon to one
great
of the fastest
pass,
humans.
Great block, great reception, great route.
McMahon never saw the completion. He was buried right after he delivered the ball to Willie Gault. So lightning has struck.
When I was young and able enough, I was able to.
It's the first play of more than 30 yards that the Vikings have given up this year. That was 70 yards. Butler for the conversion. This game is back to within 1 point.
So, why didn't it go for two and tie it? Oh, that's right. There's not a rule in 1985.
Such a simpler game, at least for coaches.
Couldn't go for two.
Nope.
Yeah, so just the whole idea that he badgers his way into the game, and on the first play, he throws a 70-yard touchdown pass. And,
pretty ballsy. There's no other way to see that, man. He just totally – no. It's just – what a moment. Like you said, you're a 12-year-old kid. I'm a 13-year-old kid. It was just an incredible moment to see a guy. It just – this is why we love sports. That's all I want to say.
Well, the Vikings tried to fool Jim there. They knew it was his first play of the game. He was excited. They figured they'd come with the all-out blitz and fool him, but Jim read it perfectly. And I have to reiterate what OJ said. It was
fourth down, 5 yards on the kickoff.
Absolutely great play by Walter Payton picking up that blitz. And there is Willie Gault with the great speed. He was wide open.
Willie Gault, we will say a lot of things we have and we will. I ran into a neighbor of mine and we started talking about the Bears, and he told me something that I thought was completely, he had no idea what the fuck he was talking about. And he told me that, that we talked about this game because he listens, Caesar listens, actually got a real life neighbor that tunes in, and we somehow were talking, and I said, well, we're probably going to do this game. And we talk about this touchdown that just happened. And then he's like, isn't that crazy that that's his only touchdown that he scored that year? And I thought he was full of shit. And I looked it up and it was. And that's not even a knock on Willie. He had like a really good start to his career. He had 8 touchdown receptions as a rookie, and he tapered off the next year. He did catch one in the Super Bowl. But yeah, fun fact, this is the only touchdown that Willie Gault caught all season, and he started all 16 games. Just kind of a weird.
This is a very 80s thing. He is standing in front of the camera on the sidelines, basically doing the hi, mom.
Wait till Silky D does it.
But it was such a well-thrown ball.
Willie might very well be saying hi, just looking at himself.
Yeah, I think he's saying
hi, me. Rhymes is back for the Vikings. Kevin Butler will put it in play. 17-16. Minnesota still leading, and a beautiful kick by Butler.
We don't see a Buster Rhymes.
The Minnesota Vikings will have it on the 20-yard line. Here's Joe.
Butler got 5 extra yards because they Vikings lined up offsides on the extra point, so then he could boot it right through the end zone. Now we're seeing a very young-looking Joe Namath.
With a solo shot, like in the frame, it's like the camera's on Joe and nobody else.
Appears to be talking it into a tennis ball, too.
Just right for the Bears on that play. It was pretty good defensive philosophy. Quarterback comes in the game. He's cold. He's a little bit nervous, so let's put the pressure on him. Well, it didn't work that time, obviously. Jim McMahon's too smart for it, along with Walter Payton. Walter Payton did a terrific job picking up Dennis Johnson right there. And Willie Gault in a one-on-one situation. Well, we all know by now he's very difficult to keep up with. What a pass by Jim McMahon. Great, great play, all-around offensive play. Fine play.
McMahon held it to until he saw Gault clear. He never saw the completion. 70-yard touchdown to Willie Gault. Great effort made possible by an all-around football player, Walter Payton. First and 10, the Vikings leading by 1. Kramer, and that ball almost picked off. Mike Richardson had a good shot at it. It's incomplete. It'll be second down and 10.
So one of the things, Frank is going to continually refer to the last time Tommy Kramer faced the Bears, and he threw 5 touchdowns. And then he says, oh, that was 1982. Like, all right, Frank, that's a completely different Bear team, basically, than
this
what
is what's
playing.
Funny. It happens to be equidistant in time from the 79 Vikings game that we did a few weeks ago, which also starred Tommy Kramer. So I guess if nothing else, you know, it's a reference point, I suppose.
Like that, I think, has a tendency to even fire up the Bears' defense as well. You know, they have their leader back in there talking
to McKinnon today in a meeting.
He said
Jim McMahon
just
Bears
fires up the team when he's in there. He's a heck of a leader, a heck of a competitor, and it looks like he's picked up the defense as well.
Willie Gault now having his finest game of his pro career. 5 receptions on the night, 132 yards, the 170-yard touchdown.
That is not Willie Gault's finest game. Did he just say that it's Willie Gault's finest game already?
7 minutes remaining in the third quarter. In that kind of a football game.
I believe it was his career high for yardage already.
No! He caught 2 touchdowns from Walter Payton.
Good defensive player. He is a rookie. Kramer spinning out of trouble again. And this time fires it up there. Gets it to Leo Lewis, who makes a super catch. That is one of the most difficult catches in football.
So that's very Frank. You can see, you can read Steve Jordan's name. Oh, that's a nice pass to Leo Lewis, who makes a tough catch right there. Toughest catch you can make.
He did call Leo Lewis.
Frank, can you read?
It's not even 2 different receivers. I think they talk about how small, or maybe it was Carter.
Well, look, they're standing right next to each other right here. Steve Jordan is twice the size of Leo Lewis. They're literally right next to each other. And then Frank goes into this long explanation of how the low pass is the hardest one. This is a guy who
a screenshot of that.
So when who was the guy that knocked Frank out for a year? The guy from the Eagles,
Chuck Bednarik.
would Frank wish he had been bending over for a low pass instead of just running head high right by Chuck? Probably.
Ball,
that is incredible.
Richard Dent, like, again pressuring, like, Tommy Kramer out of the pocket. First down, Minnesota.
If I was Richard Dent, I'd go straight to the official. I don't know how they missed that holding penalty. He's talking to the official now. He beat his man at the line of scrimmage. Kramer was dead meat, and he
ramping up.
All right, well, we missed the first one.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to talk over an OJ double entendre.
Yeah. So on the Willie Gault, on the replay of the Willie Gault touchdown, OJ says something that now, in hindsight, is hilarious and chilling. He says, Willie Gault is one of the fastest people a long pause, living. Sounds like a threat.
An infinite treasure trove of double entendres.
And here what he just said was, he was talking about Dent was complaining to the ref that he got held. And I'll just gotta find it. So we might as well listen to OJ.
Yeah, play it again. No, because I talked over. I didn't mean to. I was, you know, still laughing about Frank.
Remaining in the third quarter. In that kind of a football game, that's the first big play we've had. But it has been, I promise you, a hard-hitting game. Good defensive play on the part of both clubs. Kramer spinning out of trouble again. And this time fires it up there. Gets it to Leo Lewis, who makes a super catch. That is one of the most difficult catches in football, pulling it off your shoestring.
He never corrects
himself, Dent,
does he?
Again, pressuring Tommy Kramer out of the pocket. First down, Minnesota.
If I was Richard Dent, I'd go straight to the official. I don't know how they missed that holding penalty. He's talking to the official now. He beat his man at the line of scrimmage. Kramer was dead meat, and he was grabbed. His jersey was grabbed from behind.
He was dead meat.
I'm telling you, folks, the man knows what he's talking about. Richard Dent was, you know.
I mean, if I was Richard Dent, I would act like like that man was delivering glasses to my ex-wife's house.
Oops.
That's what I would say.
I'm sorry. Time machine. 9 years early. Years too early. Oh. Yeah. OJ is still a rising star.
First down, 30-yard line. Kramer looking it over. He wanted to go outside to Leo Lewis. He had to finally check it off to Allen Rice.
Once again.
Incomplete.
I'm sorry. He did have that right.
Minnesota, they have to throw the ball deep now, Joe. These guys are just sitting on those short passes now, and they're just taking shots at the ball when it's released.
Well, that last time,
I didn't know there was
a
female Ragnar.
Kramer is going early. But with one-on-one coverage, I'd like to see him go deep, too.
Last time, Tommy Kramer played against these Bears, he really blew them away, 35-70 at 5 touchdowns.
When was that, Frank?
Over 340 yards.
Give us the year.
That was back in 82. He hasn't played against the Bears since then because of injuries.
Missed four games against them, but it's still relevant.
Right. Meanwhile, Jim Finks
nowhere to go. Down goes Kramer inside the 25 to the 24.
It's a fact that he holds on to. He just has to get it out there.
Third down and 16.
16. This should be fun.
I promise you, those four down linemen, Dent, Hampton, McMichael, and Hartenstein will just let it fly.
Kramer,
the protection is picked off, however. This is Wilbur Marshall.
You know, it's as good as a punt, Tommy. It's fine.
Marshall brings it back to the 25-yard line. That time, Kramer had a lot of time. A poorly thrown ball is picked off.
I think that's the first time tonight that
first career
Minnesota didn't show the patience that they need. They still have a one-point lead. And I think they should have been a little more patient, try to get a little of it back, punch
it's
the ball.
It's third and 16, OJ.
Do the job. They've been doing it all night. Wilbur Marshall.
It's not a big deal.
An excellent job of reading it and does a fine job of running with the ball.
Yards
here.
His first career interception, and it gives the Bears the ball inside the 26-yard line of the Minnesota.
So a nice shot of Wilbur with a popped collar back from his days probably in Gainesville.
Ahead of his time. Yeah, quite possibly, yeah.
Yeah, so we learned there that's Wilbur's first career interception.
So a couple of firsts, Wilbur's first pick and Busta Rhymes, not the rapper, but the football player after whom the rapper named himself, gets his first reception in this game. So that's pretty cool.
And we had seen Mike Richardson drop two interceptions already in this game. But that one was apparently Tommy's first mistake of the day.
Yeah. The other thing
I guess it's not a mistake to throw the ball near Mike Richardson because he's not going to catch it.
The other thing is that we've talked about some of these games. I think we may have broken one or two down. The Packers game might have been an example where the defense was just a little bit, kind of just takes them a while sometimes to get revving up, you know. And, the McMahon thing helped because they were in trouble. And they were in legitimate trouble in this game. Remember, too, the Bears won the first 12 games of the season and they, you know, were knocking on the door of history. And that could have all gone for naught here in week three. But it is funny that once McMahon comes in, it wasn't always just McMahon. But there are a lot of times where the defense or the offense couldn't get going. The defense gives up a few touchdowns. It happened in week one when they gave up 28 first half points. It's just so funny that once the game kind of settles down and the Bears slowly take the lead, in this case it was quickly, but the defense then just becomes this, like, just this assault machine for the rest of the game. And that's pretty much where it's starting to go.
So here. We're going to get an ad here again in a second. So okay. after the oh crap. Having technical problems here.
You got it.
So after the interception and Wilbur's return, the Bears now have the ball on the Viking 25.
33 remaining in the third quarter. Minnesota leading Chicago 17-16. McMahon firing. McKinnon. Touchdown. McMahon has thrown two footballs tonight. Two touchdowns, a 25.
He's only thrown two. He didn't warm up.
Earlier, a few moments ago, if you were not with us, a 70-yarder to Willie Gulp. This is hard to believe.
Does he make things happen? Positive things for this offense.
Andy, I'm going to ask you to play this again, only because I'd like to real quickly draw a comparison to Frank Gifford and the aforementioned Pat Summerall, because. All right, they were both contemporaries in the oddities where they went into broadcasting and became play-by-play guys. They were former NFL players. This sounds like a Summerall call, but the Summerall call was like calculated by Pat. This play, I think, like Gifford sounds confused, and maybe I'm wrong, and that's why I asked just to play it again, because he's minimalistic, but it's like it doesn't. I don't know. That maybe I'm now just piling on Frank, but it just sounded like, I mean, you know,
save that for the stewardesses.
It's remaining in the third quarter. Minnesota leading Chicago 17-16. McMahon firing. McKinnon.
I guess touchdown. Not. I think that's been
McMahon
harsh.
McMahon has thrown two footballs tonight.
Thanks for sharing that again, because I enjoyed it.
Two touchdowns, a 25-yarder there to McKinnon. Earlier, a few moments ago, if you were not with us, a 70-yarder to Willie Gulp. This is hard to believe.
Does he make things happen, positive things for this offense?
They actually seem more subdued on this one.
Things are getting more exciting, and they're like, oh, he's
right. Okay, so that's not just me.
It's an odd play. It's a rollout to his left. So he's rolling out against his body. And clearly, it's supposed to just be a simple pass into the flat. And the Vikings must have taken it away. Because then you see him not only look upfield, but have to turn his whole body. And he throws a pass that Joey Browner just about intercepts.
And he's falling backwards while he throws it. So it is kind of awesome in that improvisational sense. And I'll be honest, I didn't quite remember this play like in that way. In my head it was three bombs, but it kind of adds to it now that I've seen it again, because it was just sort of a improvisational McMahon play that worked out. It was lucky, and McKinnon's a tough guy that's going to pull that one in too.
Get up there, speed can get to the interception defensively. That ball hung up there,
but
like
it's Joey Browner,
perfectly timed,
so he's not gonna
right.
Kevin Butler for the conversion, and the Bears have retaking the lead.
But they do seem pretty subdued. Maybe I'm disappointed as a Bears fan that they're not more excited.
Not a football
but...
game. And this man has put some electricity into it. Jim McMahon.
Yeah, I
colorful,
feel it, Frank.
Fun, and rather skillful.
2 of 2, 95 yards, 2 touchdowns. Is that good? Seems good. And there's Jim McMahon doing the high mom.
So they just got the stationary high mom.
The man blinked. Finally.
Yeah. Jim's feeling good.
He is intense. I think he's very special. Saying hello to his lovely wife, Nancy. I know she's sitting at home and on the edge of her seat and certainly concerned because...
Why did you get to drop her name, Joe?
Joe, hey, Nancy. I know you're alone. Maybe I could... Where exactly are you, Nancy? Would you like... I'd like to be on the edge of your seat, too.
About the 23-yard line. Let's take a look at McKinnon now, Joe, and isolation.
It seemed a little...
Yes, again, this is a fairly dangerous pass for some people to be throwing, but Jim, with the velocity he can throw the football,
that's the whole point.
Knows he can get it to him, and McKinnon just simply outruns Browner. It was an inside-outside coverage by Browner and Vest, but neither one of them kept up with
it. It is kind of a lucky
thing
McKinnon didn't
get
decapitated.
Falling away to his left, he rolled to his left. He's right-handed, of course. Still was able to get the
ball. I think Browner was the inside guy, not the guy
coming
over the top.
Yeah, because he hit people.
The catastrophe quarterback.
The catastrophe quarterback.
Two touchdowns.
He's big on that. Frank, second let it go. Just like Buddy Curry.
22-yard line. Kramer gets it to Anderson. And Anderson is met at the 25-yard line. The game is about three. It'll bring up second and seven.
Tell us who that is. There it is. Spotter got to him. So we've seen Wilbur and Dave Duerson, the two replacement players in 85.
Kramer dancing around, but he finds Anderson, and Anderson slips, but he gets the first down over the 35-yard line.
Fencek about ready to.
A good move by Anderson, finding the dead spot in there, and they have to give the offensive line.
Good move falling down.
Vikings credit. Tommy had a lot of time back there to find the receiver.
It doesn't happen often.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Having returned this year, now in his 18th season, four Super Bowls, all of them lost by the Minnesota.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, one of the things I don't think Bud gets enough credit for is not only did he coach in and lose four Super Bowls, but he did a nice job playing the old sergeant in White Christmas.
I've never actually seen White Christmas. I thought you were going to go the Harry Morgan reference.
Years, Bud Grant won this simple division.
Colonel Potter.
Of course, the Bears won it for the very first time with a 10-6 record.
First yeah, is that the part where they say the Bears won their first title of any kind since 1963?
And it was right, because
NFC Central.
Central. Yep, at the North. That was their first one. But, of course, their first of five in a row.
Gain of seven.
This is one of the reasons Minnesota should have showed a little more patience on that third and long before. I think that was the first time they...
Oh, there's Darren Nelson. Stanford alum.
Very successfully here in the second half, doing just what they're doing now. A few runs and short passes.
The third down.
There's just a banner on the wall back there that just says, go with those linebackers Mike Mularkey.
The Mike Mularkey fan club.
Yep.
Few bad passes Kramer has thrown tonight.
How many future coaches are on this field? You got Singletary and Frazier.
Anderson gets away from McMichael, but not Dan Hampton.
It's fun to see him swarm. Look at all those awesome players.
Third down and five.
Third and five. What's going to happen here?
43-yard line. 2:24 remaining in the third quarter. Tommy Kramer.
Ooh, even better. Third and ten.
The whistle stopped the play.
Here comes your ref.
Yeah, one of those linemen pulled his
I'm out of breath.
False start, number 71. Offense. Still third down.
It's not out of breath. There's just something funny about how he comes.
Here in the third quarter.
Good old number 60.
Yeah.
He's no Jerry Murphy.
Dick Jurgensen. Jurgensen.
And now movement on the line.
Oh, baseball scores.
Baseball scores.
The Tigers over the Yankees. World Series. Yep.
The Angels over the White Sox 1-0. And that was in the seventh. And
eventual World Series champion Kansas City Royals embroiled in a 2-2 tie in the seventh inning.
With Sietke.
Yeah, they would win the World Series, by the way, thanks to Don Denkinger. Cheers to Kansas City. Yep. And Don Denkinger.
I have no problem with that.
Of course, leads the Yankees and the American.
Look like a good call to me.
There, Frank will tell us about a baseball happening going on tonight when the Vikings punt before. I think it's coming up at the end of this drive. Now, I think Frank has baseball in his mind.
There you see part-time action in baseball in the American League. Third down and 10 now for the Vikes.
They're not picking this.
Kramer.
Hey, nice pass, Tommy. There's nobody.
Going in the general direction of Buster Rhymes.
The general direction.
Frank with some shade.
Tommy.
Oh, they're getting booed.
Yeah, they got booed after after their last three and out, too.
Greg Coleman comes out now. A punter from Minnesota.
The friendly Swedes and Norwegians turned on them, on the Vikings.
I think it was earlier, unless he says it now. I think it was earlier. No, wait.
Greg Coleman's cousin, brother, Vince, stole his 100th base. His cousin, brother, stole his 100th base tonight. For the Cardinals.
On the night that Vince Coleman steals 100 bases as a rookie, Coleman. Frank Gifford does him the honor of confusing whether or not he's a cousin or brother of the Vikings player.
Good coverage by the Vikes. They hold McKinnon short at the 32-yard line, where it'll be first and 10. 40.
Now, on that, you, Silky D, did something you don't see these days. Because it was a short punt, he caught that on like a dead sprint.
And then kept running.
That is a good way to get your head knocked off of the rest of your body.
Or, yeah, or get paralyzed.
1 yard punt, 8 yard return, but the flag is down.
Uh-oh, somebody cheated.
Why?
The Vikings.
He's done
bring it back. We're doing it again.
Procedure.
Oh, there. No, Vince Coleman's cousin brother is going to have to punt again?
No, Jim McMahon came out, waved it off. Give me the ball. I want to throw another touchdown.
Right. I'm hot. I've only thrown two footballs tonight, according to Frank. I haven't even warmed up.
And they do indeed decline the penalty, so the Bears will have a first and 10, the ball at the 32-yard line. Quick count by McMahon.
Of course, it doesn't happen right away, but it almost does. But Galt wouldn't have scored there. That's why he didn't catch it.
That would have been three for three. And McMahon is saying,
he just missed one.
You catch it.
You might want to say he dropped it at about the
20. McMahon underthrew it, I think, though, did he?
These are the passes Willie normally do.
Yeah,
Willie
had to slow down.
Yeah,
he has him. The ball, but, he's kind of fading back and outside a little bit.
Like OJ starts. OJ starts by saying, these are balls that Willie normally catches.
I think
OJ, he catches balls when he's got nobody within 10 yards.
Wouldn't tell you he could have had it. It would have been a darn good catch.
Well, not the only way he could have caught it.
It would have been a tough catch. It was not a great
throw. He's trying to catch it, keep some stride, and get into the end zone.
Whatever, assholes.
These guys are down 10. Again, quick count by McMahon.
Oh, the great Kenny Martrim.
Kenny Martrim, former Stanford All-American, has first down yardage. Out of
kids, if you're wondering, Kenny Martrim was the Cooper Kupp of his time.
I would say a contemporary, you could say the poor man's Steve Largent.
For the 45-yard line.
He's got white shoes on, though.
They have Willie, too. He did.
Famously,
with
black shoes in the Super Bowl.
He's slower.
That's
what
he is giving about his...
The one bear that I was able to exchange a high five during the parade.
He
was on top of the bus.
According to the stats he just showed, he had over 1,000 yards in his career there, which would have made him like the third all-time Bears receiver. He might still be number three.
Kenny Martrim was very good his first couple of years when he was healthy. He actually was.
Bad knee surgery a year ago. Missed all of last year.
Oh, I think this might be the start of knee talk during the broadcast, where Joe gets really into all the guys with bad knees.
Time remaining in the third quarter. McKinnon in motion. Movement and contact before the ball.
More cheating by the Vikings.
So Thayer's in here now. I think
Becker was in earlier.
Yeah, he was injured a lot early. He really basically lost his job in injury. I don't think anything was there.
But in the interior,
not a good start for Tommy.
Oh, that was on Thayer. Yeah, way to go, Tommy. They teach you that shit with the blitz? Is that what happened?
At right guard.
He's like, George Allen was
a questionable starter tonight because of the bruised back and tailbone.
Oh, look at the graphics on ABC. The little bar charts
that the Bears certainly aren't going to set on this.
Earlier in the game, they had a drive chart. And they showed the field, and then there were these little squiggly lines to show where the passes went, what yards they went from. It was the height of technology.
On the other side, they know they need to get some more points. They're going full.
Who's the cool guy, man, with the sunglasses on at night in the dome?
Exactly what I was wondering.
Long count. Man, that ball incomplete.
Another ball bounced off Willie.
Does not hold on. Short of the first down.
James Maness is on the sidelines, but I would have caught that. Put me in,
second down and 15.
Right. I think, didn't he have a coke problem, James Maness? I think he did. Is that 81?
He was a catastrophe quarterback. If Fuller went down, we presume Tomczak went down. Fuller struggled through the first half.
Oh, McMahon's numbers going to the tank. He's now 3 for 5 for 108 yards.
He instantly, on the first play, hit Willie Gault for a 70-yard touchdown. They got the ball back a few moments later on an interception. He went right to the air again on his second pass of the game. He hit Dennis McKinnon from 25 yards out. The Bears in the lead 23-17.
Get ready to update that recap, Frank.
Looks down and out over the Minnesota defense. Second down, 15. That's Willie Gault.
Willie with a stiff arm.
Close to a first down. I think he
got him the first down.
Isaac Holt. Giving Gault a lot of
Ike Holt
way too much room.
Kiss
some
turf.
I was going to say to Joe, that was a record cushion. On a receiver.
Look at OJ. I tell you,
Isaac Holt must have been 15 yards away from Willie Gault.
Gault had his eye right on that first down marker. I tell you, when you're dealing with a guy who probably would have been a sprinter or perhaps even a hurdler in
the 84 Olympics, he's not signed a Bears contract.
Well, you're going to give him a little bit.
Bring the chains all the way across the field.
And I believe they've grown to
it's laying on top of the
Jim
marker.
McMahon's arm.
They're going to have to
well.
Move the marker to
this guy's liable to do anything to try anything out there. They want to give plenty of room. Well, not much short for the first down.
Good thing they measured, I guess. Shows what we know.
Yeah. Right.
Well, now six receptions, 148 yards.
It's a big day for Willie. And, yeah, probably his best individual game of the season since we've already established
as a number one draft pick.
His only touchdown. But he did have eight touchdowns as a rookie. So he kind of came in with a flash.
Well, Jim McMahon. I would suspect he'll go with a long count here. He's been going on short counts. He would like to draw the Vikes offside. I'm quite sure of that.
I think he does, isn't he, or not?
Maybe
not.
There's a setback. And McMahon,
yep. There you go. So the quarterback,
the
right, couldn't play because he's in traction.
Pinched nerve in his neck.
Third and inches with the greatest running back of all time that's behind him. I'll just run a sneak.
In traction after the game this
this is the Jim McMahon game.
Sunday, in which the
Walter
Payton
only has a role
seven.
As a blocker, but an awesome one.
Spent a couple days in the hospital. Joe, you were down visiting with him. He had a big horse collar around his neck. He looked like he was really in agony, didn't he? When I first
he was eating oats out of a bag, Frank.
Camp, he was holding court with about 20 newsmen. And he had this huge harness around his neck.
Did after you tell him you're going to go check on Nansky?
I told him I'd go do a wellness check on Nansky.
He almost pulled Ditka's leg too long because Ditka wasn't going to play him tonight because he had not worked.
Got to tell you what, Nancy, my neck works.
McMahon again, wide open field.
Just don't ask me about my knee.
He wants the bundle. Pat McKinnon.
Hey!
Third touchdown pass tonight for McMahon.
Unreal.
McKinnon second.
Unreal.
A 43-yard effort, and he is blowing this game away. He makes things happen.
They don't know what to say.
No.
Maybe that's good.
Great effort by McKinnon. He never gave up on McMahon. He kept full stride.
I'm just surprised. Like they're not. Watching. They're so. They feel subdued.
Back. He knows what's
just
going
saw
on. McMahon
a
will be chased out of the pocket
touchdowns.
Right here. There he is. He takes a look. Now he knows what McMahon can do. He tries to give him a play in which to hit him,
God,
and he's right
McKinnon.
There.
It's hard great to blame route. A defensive back. When a receiver can run that far
that's a good
and
route.
Still catch a pass.
Well said, Arenthal.
A
James.
Lot of protection. McMahon did an excellent job.
Bears
of getting
the extra point, and the wings blocking on the extra point
Butler,
are Ron Rivera and Wilbur Murphy.
Wow. The second and first round draft pick, respectively,
numbers.
The year before.
5 of 7, 166 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And McKinnon is having another big day.
Yeah, see, this is Silky D's time in the camera. I know Willie Cox is a movie star, but
Dennis ain't going to
back down. He's got a whole lot to say.
43-yard touchdown. He had a 25-yard touchdown. McMahon hit Willie Cox with a 70-yard touchdown.
Well, there's an old saying that if you can back it up, it ain't bragging.
Yeah, old saying.
And McKinnon was in the paper all week this week with statements that there was no way the Vikings could beat them, that they were a better team and it would be no game if these guys played their ball game. And I gather
goddamn right,
this
somebody.
Is Chicago's ball game. I've never seen them play quite like this.
But that was a tremendous pass.
Well, that's kind of true.
Running to his left and throwing the ball 50 yards. He's got some kind of arm.
Incredible.
He has really turned the
Steve Fuller,
on
Ed
here.
Hughes.
There, course,
Steve.
The man who started the game.
Steve's like, I don't know.
Hughes?
I could have done that.
Do you know I was a Rhodes Scholar?
They were 1 point down when the man came into the game and set off the fireworks.
I mean, he shouldn't even be sweating, hardly.
So there's Frank. They were down 1 point when Jim McMahon came back. No, they weren't.
I mean,
down.
They almost don't even know what to make of
it. It's deep, and this will be Rhymes who bobbles it in the end zone. It'll be touchdown.
I mean, O.J. does make a point.
Defense.
I mean, it sounded simplistic.
It just seems to permeate through the entire
it was
team
like,
something like that happens.
You know, I've never seen the Bears like this before. I guess that's true, and that's what made this team, you know, sadly so unique.
Yeah. So, yeah, usually they're just shit on offense.
Right.
So, yeah, so the Bears have turned a
yeah, and that, and this is like if you want to watch just that institutional brutality, it's the next, I guess, what is it, 45 minutes of the Bears defense just teeing off. I mean, I enjoyed it when I watched it.
So
I did
a few things to look for if you're watching the game. Go to about 146-20, And they have a nice shot of the Bears radio booth, where you will see from left to right, Jim Hart, Hall of Famer Dick Butkus. And if you don't recognize the guy on the far right with the wispy blonde hair.
Is that Dick Gephardt, former Democratic presidential candidate?
It's a pre-toupee Wayne Larrivee.
That's pretty. That's
and
awesome.
Kids, if you didn't know Wayne wore a toupee, I can't help you. He basically had Super Dave Osborne's hair for the last 30 years. But there he is. I didn't realize how blonde he was. Why didn't he get a blonde toupe?
That are we sure that's that itself is the not is he not already toupee'd up there?
Does that looks look awful. Pretty?
I didn't remember Wayne Larrivee. That was his rookie year, by the way. This is the first year of this crew. I didn't think of him ever as like a blonde. I wonder if it might be the. I thought he was brownish.
Yeah,
black-ish.
That's why I had to look a couple of times. Like, well, it has to be Wayne.
It's funny that they just disregard former NFL all still today all time Chicago, St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Arizona Cardinal passing leader Jim Hart and SIU Hall of Famer. They only give credit to Butkus, which of course is completely fine.
Well, the reason is because Joe all he wants to talk about are guys' knees. For the whole rest of the game,
and nobody
He talks about how Dick is actually. We should probably play this because it's you just wouldn't hear it today. He basically is like, "Oh, Dick says his knees are terrible."
Yeah, yeah, and he did. Butkus had the most the goriest knee history of anybody. I feel like
he's the best that I've ever seen. I don't think any player has ever played his position with more aggressiveness and intelligence than Dick Butkus.
On first down, Kramer back again. Trying to get it to Lewis one more time. I noticed the topic of the conversation is Joe was visiting with Dick Butkus. Had to do with those knees.
Yeah,
Dick's having a lot of trouble with his knees right now. And speaking of knees, that's Anderson.
Oh, maybe that was a clever segue. Because then they show the Viking running back with the ice bag on his knee. Maybe some
Alfred Anderson.
Frank to bring up knees. So later on,
You're right. Namath is obsessed in this broadcast. But Namath himself was sort of slowed down by knee injuries, is he not?
Right, his career ended early because of knee, and he was limited late in his career because of terrible knees. He had to retire early because of them. He talks about when they talk about Buster Rhymes that he used to play running back at Oklahoma. Then Joe brings up Marcus Dupree and then talks about how Marcus has just suffered a serious knee injury and his career might be over, and Frank and OJ just completely ignore it. It just hangs there horribly, uncomfortably. These guys
wants to talk about knees.
So for this Monday night booth, it's three Pro Football Hall of Famers. It's the most talented football booth they've ever assembled. And it's just terrible. It's just a god awful booth. They're all bad at their jobs.
Yeah, it is. This is like that period of Saturday Night Live, like after John Belushi and Gilda Radner and Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray and everybody left, but before Eddie Murphy and Joe Piscopo kind of started turning it around before they kind of got some sort of a, consistent, formula. But there was a period where it was just awful. And I feel like this is the equivalent of the history of Monday Night Football until, of course, they went to ESPN. Because I can't speak to – they've been all kinds of ups and downs since they went to cable. But in the history of ABC Monday Night Football, this is really the nadir, I would have to say.
Yeah, so that would have been like the Tim Kazurinsky and Mary Gross. SNL.
But that's yeah.
Who was
that's,
the guy? That, Charlie. Who was the guy Eddie who Murphy swore?
Charlie Rocket.
Yes.
He killed himself by slitting his own throat about 15 years ago.
Oh,
by the way. Yeah.
Well, that brings back. Sure, were you sure OJ wasn't around?
That's bringing it full circle. Yeah. No, yeah, Mary, you're right. Mary Grove, they were part of that. Tim Kazurinsky, I loved him, Chicago guy. He'd do that psychiatrist. They're like, if your brain is dead, but you're still singing, you have pericoma. And I just thought that was fucking hilarious. It's stuff like that. He would do those weird, But there was a period before them. I don't think anybody notable was there. Maybe it was only like a 2-year period. And it was like that show could have been canceled then.
Yeah.
Instead, it was kind of thrown a lifeline. But right. Monday Night Football was
Lauren
not
came
in
back
danger.
And Eddie right. saved it. Yeah, Lauren came back gone. And they.
But Monday Night Football was not in danger of being canceled, but they needed to do some shit because this three-man crew that they had going on was just like, it was aimless, disjointed, and weird. I mean, this is an incredible ball game, and it's like kind of being counterbalanced by.
Yeah,
this.
they did not rise to the occasion.
Right, they're like, well, they
kind of did on the first play. At least Joe yelled out during the first
yeah,
one.
Joe was genuinely enthusiastic, but the rest of it just always it seems feel so stilted. So.
Yeah. So that so the McKinnon touchdown pass there was 43 yards. That was his second in a row. That made it 30-17. Anthony Carter would catch a long pass from Tommy Kramer to pull the Vikings to within 6 in the fourth quarter. But then Kevin Butler made a field goal, and the Bears went up by 9, and that was the winning margin.
So Carter caught 2, and I think his first one was his first as an NFLer, by the way. Not that he had an NFL Hall of Fame career, but he had some notable moments. I didn't actually watch this after. Good for you to follow it through, or maybe you're just reading the recap.
Yeah, Anthony Carter
had himself a game, and he would have a bigger game against the Niners in 87 when Chris Carter joined him, but Chris Carter wasn't here yet.
Yeah, so Anthony Carter, fresh off the USFL, was a 25-year-old rookie. He would catch 8 touchdown passes that season, so and he caught 7, 7, 6, 4, 8, 5.
He had a better NFL career than I remembered, actually, overall. Because I was just thinking about that Niners upset, but he actually had a really good career.
Well, he would be the Bears' all-time leading receiver by more than 2,000
Vikings.
Yards.
Is that
no, he would be the Bears.
Oh, 7,000?
Yeah.
He's got
7,636.
And what is he on the Vikings, like 4th or 5th probably? Or I mean, Ahmad Rashad is probably past that. And, you know, Randy Moss, Jesus Christ, the Vikings probably have... since we're talking about it, the Vikings have at least 6. They might even have a tight end. Maybe a Joe Sensa.
6 more than Johnny Morris?
6 receivers who have more career receiving yards than Johnny Morris's 5,000 and whatever it is. 67
yeah, you're wrong. They have 7.
That went too low.
Chris Carter, 12,383. Then Randy Moss, who did his all in 11 seasons, 93-16. Anthony Carter's 3rd.
Wow.
Jake Reed, 4th. Sammy White.
Running back? No. Sammy White was he
wide
was
receiver
of the
70s.
70s. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Steve Jordan, who we saw in this game.
Is a tight end. So they do
and
have
then
a
this
end.
Season, Adam Thielen would have moved Jesus past Christ. Johnny. And Ahmad Rashad is within just a few yards of Johnny.
Oh, well, he retired.
Johnny's over 5,500, right? Ahmad's 5489.
No, I thought Johnny. I'll look it up.
Indignity. Do we have 8?
Johnny just cleared 5,000. I'll look that up while you stay there. But I'm pretty sure we've looked at it often enough. You'd think one of us would have it committed to memory.
I 5,500, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think he had for the Bears 5,059 yards.
Oh shit. Well, yeah.
Incredible. Just incredible. So Bobby Moore's got to beat then, huh?
Bobby Moore, by any name, Bobby okay. Moore, Ahmad Rashad.
And so, who was the guy 2 ahead of Steve Jordan? I forget who you said who that was.
Jake Reed.
Was Jake Reed a tight end too?
No, he was a big wide receiver.
He was a receiver. He was big, but
he would have been there. Was there during the Chris Carter years.
Right, but he was a but he wasn't a tight end because but before Randy Moss, right? He probably bridged them from Anthony Carter to Randy
Moss.
Him
and Randy would have played together for like 3 or 4 years.
But not a tight end, but Steve Jordan obviously in this game was. So the Vikings have at least one receiver with more career receiving yards than the Bears leading all-time leading receiver. Oh,
yeah,
just
Willie Jake Reed, wide receiver, 6'3", 216 from Grambling.
That is big. All right. HBCU.
So then more Bear indignity.
Yeah, throw it on the pile. Someday, we'll have a guy.
But yeah, the Bears covered, and the game went over. So that's
good. They covered. Imagine the gamblers at halftime of this game.
Yeah,
on both sides.
Vikings were 3.5.
Vikings were obviously getting 3.5 at home, right? Or no, were they giving
3.5-point favorites.
Because they were 2-0 and Bud Grant was back and they beat the Niners in week one and nobody really believed in the Bears yet. Wow. Yeah, so 17-9 right after the first drive of the second half. They were feeling pretty good.
So, yeah, I mean, sure, Jim McMahon, yeah, fine. 13 of 18, 124 yards. No, sorry, that was Steve Fuller. Jim McMahon, 8 of 15 for 236 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Wow.
But Tommy Kramer, 28 for 55 for 436 and 3 touchdowns and 3 interceptions.
Not quite as good as
and he got sacked 4 times
3 years ago. Only 3. Okay. It was actually an improved performance for the Vikings because, you know, as we said, the Bears swept them the year before. We've talked about both games, one in which the Bears won the division on that turf late in the season, but the other one was when they sacked poor old 39-year-old Archie Manning about 11 times. Both games were blowouts. So, you know, Bud Grant, obviously, say what you want about him, but he, you know, pretty good coach.
Let's see. The Bears had interceptions by Leslie Frazier, Wilbur Marshall, which we saw, and Otis Wilson. They got sacks from – oh, they don't list sacks. They got 4 sacks, but why aren't they listed on the thing?
Well, we saw McMichael get one. And I assume Dent had one.
A little disappointed in the record-keeping there.
Yeah, pro football is not quite the same as Baseball Reference.
Yeah. Going to have to hire some kids to go back through and rescore all these games.
Yeah. It's out there, folks.
And it turns out, I would guess, it was hard to read, but I don't think it was a Go Mike Mularkey banner that I saw. I believe it was a Go Mark Mullaney banner. Oh, wait a sec. Oh, no, there's sacks. Steve McMichael had 2. Hampton had 1. Dent and Ron Rivera.
Yeah, right.
They both had half a sack.
Chico was the second round. So the Bears in 84 drafted linebackers in the first 2 rounds. Wilbur out of Florida and Chico out of, I think it was Berkeley. And Chico had a good career. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Finks really went out in style at the end. But Wilbur, my one thought, we saw that Wilbur and Duerson got footage tonight. And I made a reference to them being replacement players, not quite in the same spirit as 87. But, of course, for those that might not remember, the Bears had 2 very good players on the 84 team that held out. Todd Bell was a strong safety. And Al Harris, who was Dan Hampton's old colleague, another first-round pick in 79 who moved to outside linebacker. And they were replaced by Wilbur Marshall and Dave Duerson. And I think I mentioned this before. I'm just going to say it one more time, that we felt Wilbur throughout the course of the season was definitely an upgrade over Harris. We weren't so sure about Duerson because Todd Bell was such a hitter. Yep. I mean, we went for the Redskins game and he was really developing. And, but as it turned out that season, Dave Duerson, earned a trip to the Pro Bowl along with like 7 other Bears, and Wilbur didn't, which we thought he would. And Wilbur then subsequently took out his frustration on Joe Ferguson.
Yes.
The rest is history.
Yeah, so we talk about the 83 draft for the Bears.
It's incredible.
For a good reason. They drafted 2 Hall of Famers. Jimbo Covert, 6th overall, and Richard Dent, 203rd. He was the 8th round pick. But they drafted, in one draft, they got Willie Gault, Jimbo Covert, Mike Richardson, Dave Duerson, Pat Dunsmore, Tom Thayer, Mark Bortz,
wow,
Richard Dent, and, of course, Mark Zavignin, Rob Fata.
Of course.
Anthony,
I remember Rob Fata. Rob Fata wore 64.
Gary Worthy and Oliver Williams.
Even Rob Fata hung around long enough for me to remember him. Hell of a draft. We could talk about it some other time because we're out here, but it is funny that Jim Finks was actually on his way out because he was, you know, kind of overridden when the old man came down from the mountain to hire Ditka. Not Finks to hire, but he stuck around, thankfully, for the 83 draft. And turned out that he'd be able to hang his head on the Bears thanks to I mean, he drafted Otis in 80 and Van Horn in 81, but it took them a while to develop. He drafted Hampton. He drafted Peyton. It didn't happen for Finks right away like it did in Minnesota and New Orleans, but that 83 draft is what really did it. He was pretty much gone when all those guys came, you know, came along. So,
but I wanted to run down the 84 draft. Not quite as good, but, you know, he got Wilbur Marshall with the 11th pick, Ron Rivera with the 44th, Stephon Humphries and Tom Andrews, so a couple of backup
75
linemen.
And 60, yeah. Yep.
Nikita Robertson. From Central Arkansas, who never played for the Bears. Brad Anderson.
It was in this game, caught one of his only two receptions.
Mark Casale, quarterback from Montclair State, ninth round. In the 10th round, a round they don't even have, Sean Gale.
Wow.
And in the 11th round, they took Mark Butkus from Illinois.
Illinois, because he went to the Rose Bowl in the 83 Illinois team. Yeah, he was Butkus' nephew, actually. Were Stephon Humphries and Tom Andrews both in the black and blues poster?
Yes.
Wow. But Andy Frederick was not, I don't think, 71. He was in this game. He got in first now. Okay. Okay. Yeah, good.
Way to find out.
Well, good offensive line, man. I mean, it's just, you know, this is one. We've talked, obviously, before about how the NFC was uniquely dominant in the 80s. And the Bears are part of that discussion based on one season. And this is it. So it's not, you know, you're going over all this talent. We're seeing it. And this was it in full effect.
All right. Here's the Black and Blues Brothers. Black and Blues Brothers poster. It's from left to right. 60. It's Tom Andrews. Mark Bortz. Tom Thayer.
57.
Keith Van Horn.
78.
Jay Hilgenberg.
63.
Kurt Becker. Tom Andrews. 79. Stephon Humphries.
75.
And Jimbo Colbert.
74. Yeah, all right. They all made it. Yeah, it was finally a complete picture for one of the few times in our history. Defenses have been great oftentimes. Running backs have been great oftentimes. But we had a quarterback. We had receivers. We had offensive linemen. It was an embarrassment of riches. Didn't last as long as we hoped, but we sure fucking enjoyed it while it was there, right? Mm-hmm. And
thanks to the teams they fielded since, we're still forced to enjoy it. Right. It just happened because it's the only Super Bowl team we have, the Super Bowl winner that we have.
That's right. Be that as it may.
And most of that team won a road playoff game.
They did the year before, right? Everybody that played in this game, I didn't see Fridge Perry in this game. He was still sort of shackled to the bench.
Yeah, he must have played because they did talk about him.
Special teams,
and they made no. He was in. He was playing tackle.
Okay, because Hartenstein was still playing. It was Hartenstein's injury that forced Buddy to play.
Either Joe or Frank talked about how Buddy had said he was a wasted draft pick.
Right,
and they said clearly he's already showing that he's not going to be a wasted draft pick.
So. Okay, yeah, he did
even by week three. The perceptive Monday night guys were like, no, Fridge, he's
healthy. No. I loved Mike Hartenstein. I always felt bad that he, you know, had aged and injured himself off of that starting line, but they were better off with just plugging that middle with Fridge and moving Hampton back outside. I'm sorry, Hampton moved inside when, right? Who are the ends on 80? No, Hampton moved outside, right?
Yeah.
Because McMichael and Fridge are inside.
It depended. So they... they rotated guys around. Later, like maybe even the next year, Fridge would play significant amounts of tackle. But you had a lot where your tackles were Hampton and McMichael. And then you had Fridge. And then the other end could be anybody from like Tyrone Keyes.
That's right.
Who's the other guy that used to play out there?
Oh, God. But yeah, Tyrone Keyes is the guy that Richard Dent passed up. I happened to know. I didn't know it at the time, but I somehow stumbled across him and saw that he was getting more snaps than Dent, like 83, you know, kind of 83, 84. Took Dent a while to get Buddy's trust.
Henry Wachter.
Oh, good old number 70. Got a sack and got a safety in the Super Bowl. Yeah,
And then I don't know if you saw the clip of Madden explaining the 46 defense.
It was awesome
that I posted, and he did it on, he did a John Madden Super Bowl preview show in 85, even though CBS didn't have the game.
I know. I remember watching it. And he did. And you said, and you did an awesome job summarizing that, when Madden died, just like the whole arc and really what it meant for the Bears. We're talking about this season here. and we'll just repeat it, that Madden would hadn't done any games yet. He would start doing them with Dallas, I think. Dallas, Atlanta, he did the Jets late in the season, both playoff games, and the Bears. He never saw the Bears give up a touchdown.
He did five games, and the Bears never gave up a touchdown.
Five NFL games, two of which were playoff games. You're right. CBS did not – which. I guess the last thing I just want to mention, my thoughts about Madden, you know, when I was like processing, I enjoyed the documentary. I watched it after he died, and I thought it was obviously really well done. It hit all the points. But there was that relationship with those 80s Bears because it sort of coincided with his own ascendancy, really. I mean, he kind of came up, really became a thing when like Montana and the Niners are winning. But the Bears are really sort of, you know, sort of in the thick of that. And he, you know, he really, you know, God, he just really associated with them and just seemed to go out of his way to, it was just a perfect time.
Yeah. I mean, in hindsight, it feels like he felt like they were the closest thing personality wise to the Raiders teams that he had coached.
I think so.
And so he liked how much fun they had while they were kicking everybody's ass.
I think it's what kind of fueled the All-Madden team. That All-Madden team in 85, I remember, had like 11 Bears, by the way. He had like silly stuff. He had Fridge in there, I think, for back. He got goofy. The All-Madden team was like 80% of an All-Pro team, really. He wasn't being completely shtick, but there was like this gray area, and it wasn't completely meatball. There was like people that were a little bit underlooked or just provided something that didn't show up. And for whatever reason, the 85 Bears were like, just filled. I remember watching the All Madden special that year, and they just filled the hell out of that roster.
So I learned something today that I wish I didn't know, and that was that. Do you know who the coach of the 1994 All Madden team was? He used to pick a coach too.
Was it Wani?
It was Wani. Wani was bragging about it today. It's like, oh, shut up. One of the things that came out when, you know, just as people were going back over Madden's career was obviously he was popular because he was. He was the perfect blend of a football analyst who was clearly excited when exciting things happened, but he would also take the time to actually explain why things were happening. People felt like they were learning things that they otherwise might not have known. Totally. And then he had the fortuitous timing of, as he made it big, the NFC, which CBS had That's all true. The great teams. And so
comes back to your point about them being historically great.
Right. So he was he was there, and he's the sound, him and Pat are the soundtrack to the 85 Bears and the 86 Giants and the Montana 49ers
and the Riggins, Redskins. Yep.
And then all the way up to the Cowboys getting good again, and the second run of the Niners and Favre, which he loved Favre.
I know, but still. You take the good with the bad. We definitely had our good part of it because,
So, meanwhile, poor, I don't even know who, after Merlin, who even was NBC?
Well, and that was the other thing is that I didn't finish my thought, I guess, but like CBS did not have the Super Bowl, but Madden did that thing. And I don't want to disrespect Dick Enberg and Merlin Olsen, we love them, but. There was almost a little bit, and I never thought this until Madden died. I'm like, God, it's almost a little bit of regret that he wasn't in the booth for the Super Bowl. Although it's fine because Merlin also was a good analyst. Mm-hmm. Dick Enberg is the voice of generations. It worked out fine that he didn't do the game. It's really kind of a small quibble. And besides, he did the two shutouts. Upon further review, it worked out fine. But I did think that for a minute. I'm like, oh, it would have been nice if Madden was actually there at their crowning moment. But, you know, he can't have everything.
I mean, it would have been better if it had been Bob Don Crickey and Bob Trumpy, but you can't have.
That's right.
You can't have everything.
We just knew that Tim Ryan and Johnny Morris were thousands of miles.
Couldn't
away.
NBC have just said, you know what, guys, we're gonna borrow, we're gonna borrow Tim and Johnny for the Super Bowl.
Sorry,
Dick Merlin. I'm gonna sit this one out. Bear fans deserve it. So, all right. Well, that was fun. So
I enjoyed it.
85 Bears. So, I don't know who the Bears are playing in the playoffs next week. For next week's Remember This Crap. Oh, that's right. It's over. We could do Remember This Crap. The Bears fire their coaches. We could just go through
Bear
coach firings.
Let's do low, like absolute rock bottom low points in Bears history. We do 74, 82. Let's see, 99 is the all-time one. The Dave McGinnis one, though, would have to be a feature because I still don't know if we'll get lower than that. And then the end of the Trestman era, and then this. That marks five, like, real, like, low points.
Yeah, and so. It's funny. It'll be interesting to look back in a few years and see if we think this is it or if a year ago was. Before Justin Fields.
Because of Fields.
Now, it's ridiculous that they wasted an entire season, but that's kind of what the Bears do.
But they could still pull out in spite of themselves.
Right, but the idea is you have a much more attractive coaching position this year than you would have even this time last year, because there will be coaches who absolutely, unlike Nagy pretending that he was cool with Mitch, you will have actual coaches who want to coach Justin Fields. So
yes, but I do think we, you know, and we have been for like 5 weeks ever since the rumors were out and we got all excited prematurely that Nagy was gonna get fired before the end of the season, which would grant us the novelty of an interim coach for the first time. It's like the last 5 weeks have just felt like a 5 week a historic low point. And I'm like, we've been here before, you know, as bad as it's been, it's not every year, but I do wonder where maybe this shapes up, but I don't know.
Yeah, it feels less hopeless than the end of the Trestman era.
That did feel bad.
I mean, so when Fox came in the next year, he brought Vic Fangio. People forget that, but Vic predated. Vic stuck around, kind of Buddy Ryan-esque, to coach with Nagy. And Vic said at the time that the roster Fox and him inherited was worse than an expansion team. Because the veterans were either leaving or were still there but couldn't play anymore. And they had drafted so poorly under Phil Emery that there was nothing. So.
Yeah, that would be a sort of qualification for a low point. Would like 82 wouldn't qualify in that level, although for other levels, because organizationally they were like, got a 86-year-old owner still grieving the loss of his son. He's overriding his general manager, but they did have Peyton and Hampton and Singletary and Wilson. So they had talent. They had talent when, I don't know if they had talent when Wonstadt left. I don't know if I have the strength to explore that, but that's a good point. Yeah, they really had nothing organizationally and personnel-wise at the end of the Trestman era. So, it might be fun to talk about that. And then afterwards, I'll go slit my wrists.
Yep, everybody can get real depressed. All right, well, this has been fun, going through an entire Bear season for the second time in a row.
Looking backwards.
We did cheat a little bit, but I think we...
We did.
And these division games were fun because we found a way to put a spin on stuff we'd already done. The Vikings, we just found two games and did those instead. So that was
good. Yeah. And there are more, if...
There's a never-ending collection of crap.
If our audience is demanding more content, I'm sure we could dive into plenty of other games. I'm sure plenty are springing to your mind, but yeah. So.
I was thinking we'll take a couple of weeks off, and then we can remember famous work stoppages in baseball history.
Let's do it.
So that'll be great. All right, well, we'll see what happens next.
Sounds good.
But thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Andy. See you later.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have herpes.